We are honored to have President Dallin H. Oaks as our concluding devotional speaker for Summer School 1971. President Oaks assumed office August 1st, leaving a position as professor of law at the University of Chicago Law School. He was graduated at Brigham Young University in 1954 with high honors, receiving a Bachelor of Arts degree in Accounting and Economics. At the University of Chicago Law School, he received the Doctor of Law degree in 1957, graduating cum laude, second in a class of 86, and was named to the Order of the Coif. Dr. Oaks began his legal career as law clerk to the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, Earl Warren. He entered private practice with a Chicago law firm in the litigation section and in 1961 became an associate professor of law at Chicago University. He spent one summer prosecuting criminal cases as an assistant state's attorney of Cook County and another summer as a visiting professor of law at the University of Michigan Law School. From January through June 1970, he served as legal counsel to the Bill of Rights Committee of the Illinois Constitutional Convention and carried out a study for the United States Department of Justice. He had an important role in writing the Bill of Rights for the new Constitution, which Illinois voters adopted in December 1970. In 1970, he became executive director of the American Bar Foundation, which is the legal research affiliate of the American Bar Association. President Oaks published four books dealing with subjects of church and state, trust laws, etc. He is also author of some 30 articles published in leading periodicals and magazines. Active in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, he has held many important positions, including first counselor in the presidency of the Chicago Stake and formerly mission president in that stake. He is married to the lovely June Dixon of Spanish Fork, and they have five children. President Oaks is not only a dynamic leader, but also a man with great compassion and love. We are very privileged to have President Oaks as our new president and as our speaker this morning. President Oaks.
I'm honored to face you for this first time in the new responsibilities I've been called to assume. I realize that there may be some who will try to find some special significance in the topic that I have selected for my first address to the student body. No special significance should be assigned to it. My topic is simply a subject of current importance, which, so far as I have been able to determine, has not been the subject of a devotional address on the Brigham Young University campus for many years. Its current importance is suggested by three recent news events. 2 weeks ago, the governor of Illinois gave in to a well-organized group of senior citizens and signed a new law legalizing bingo in the state of Illinois when it was operated by charitable, religious, or fraternal organizations. Legalized bingo is expected to gross $60 million a year in Illinois, 10% of which will go for educational and mental health causes. Second, several months ago, New York City, through its newly organized and legalized Off-Track Betting Corporation, opened 9 off-track betting sites in the nation's largest city. In the first few weeks of operation, these betting windows took in about $250,000 a day. One of the leaders said this beginning was beyond our wildest dreams. More than 90% of the bets were in the $2 class, as the betting windows were literally mobbed by a crush of eager bettors, housewives, executives, cab drivers, secretaries, and working-class citizens. Pennsylvania, Illinois, California, Massachusetts, and Connecticut have all sent representatives to study how New York City manages what is expected to be a popular and profitable source of local revenue. Third, in the same spirit, several states have just established or are moving toward establishing state lotteries as a source of revenue. By now you've guessed, if you did not read in the Universe this morning, that my subject is gambling, which is the act of risking something of value on the outcome of a game or event that may be determined entirely or partly by chance. Why are various forms of gambling winning increasing popularity in our society? Why is government even turning to gambling as a source of revenue? The causes probably include increases in the amount of free time and increases in the amount of extra cash on the hands of our fellow Americans. Government's interest is at least partly attributable to the search for more and more sources of tax revenue to finance the increasingly expensive and widespread activities of state and local government. The attitude of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on the subject of gambling is clearly set forth in the following statement published by President Heber J. Grant and his counselors in the First Presidency in September 1925. Quote, "The Church has been and now is unalterably opposed to gambling in any form whatever. It is opposed to any game of chance, occupation, or so-called business which takes money from the person who may be possessed of it without giving value in return. It is opposed to all practices, the tendency of which is to encourage the spirit of reckless speculation, and particularly to that which tends to degrade or weaken the high moral standard which the members of the Church and our community at large have always maintained. We therefore advise and urge all members of the Church to refrain from participation in any activity which is contrary to the view herein expressed." Subsequent statements by the leaders of the Church have elaborated on the reasons for this strong position, but it has never been qualified. I will come to those reasons in a moment. First, I'd like to say something about the history of gambling. Gambling is a practice of ancient origin. Some Oriental gambling games have been traced to as early as 2100 years before Christ. The evils of gambling have long been recognized. In ancient Egypt, persons convicted of gambling were sent to the quarries. Gambling is denounced in the Hindu code, the Quran, and the Talmudic law. Aristotle denounced gamblers as thieves and plunderers. Gambling spread in the Middle Ages, especially among the nobility, but even those who practiced games of chance were willing to recognize their evil, at least for others. Legislation in England and France attempted to counteract the detrimental effects of gambling on servants, observing that it induced them to idleness or caused them to neglect archery practice, thus endangering national security. One of the most popular forms of gambling which was permitted among working-class people was the lottery. These were apparently common in the English-speaking world during the 17th and 18th centuries. Queen Elizabeth proclaimed the first state lottery in England in 1567. Lotteries were used to finance a variety of public improvements and objects. In 1660, a lottery was even held to ransom Englishmen held in slavery in Tunis, Algiers, and on Turkish galleys. Lotteries were so widespread in the United States in the early 1800s that there were almost 200 lottery offices in the state of New York alone. In 1832, the gross sale of lottery tickets was over $60 million, which was five times the total national budget of the United States government. It has been suggested that lotteries were a popular way to finance large projects because there were few reliable banks during this period and therefore no regular means to obtain a huge sum by aggregating a large number of small amounts from citizens of limited means. Whatever the merit of that suggestion, in the first half of the 1800s, there was a public revulsion against the lottery. By 1850, many states had provisions in their constitution forbidding lotteries and other forms of gambling. In many states, these same constitutional provisions stand as barriers to legal gambling today, and they are under attack. The development opposing lotteries came first in England in 1773 when the City of London petitioned the House of Commons to abolish lotteries as highly injurious to the commerce of the kingdom and to the welfare and prosperity of the people. In 1808, the Commons appointed a select committee to inquire into the evils attending lotteries. The committee report, which was an important factor in the abolition of lotteries in England a few years later, is so current that it could just as well have been written last week instead of over 160 years ago. The committee reported cases where people living in comfort and respectability had been reduced to poverty and distress. Cases of domestic quarrels, assaults, and the ruin of family peace, fathers deserting their families, mothers neglecting their children, wives robbing their husbands of the earnings of months and years, and the pawning of clothing, beds, and wedding rings in order to indulge in the speculation. In other cases, the committee reported, children had robbed their parents, servants their masters, suicides had been committed, and almost every crime that can be imagined had been occasioned either directly or indirectly through the baneful influence of lotteries. In its final report, the committee concluded that the foundation of the lottery system was so radically vicious that no system of regulation could be devised that would permit Parliament to adopt it as an efficacious source of revenue and at the same time divest it of all of its attendant evils. There can be no doubt that gambling is big business in our American society. Expert estimates of the annual amount of illegal gambling vary from $70 to $50 billion a year, with $20 billion being the most popular estimate. In round numbers, $20 billion is $100 for every man, woman, and child in the United States. The estimated total annual profits from illegal gambling are one-third this amount, or $6 to $7 billion per year. This is 50% more than the combined 1970 profits of American Telephone and Telegraph, General Motors, IBM, and Standard Oil of New Jersey. Illegal gambling is bigger than big business in our country. In 1962, Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy called attention to the fact that the American people, and I quote him, are spending more on gambling than on medical care or education, that in doing so they are putting up the money for the corruption of public officials and the vicious activities of the dope peddlers, loan sharks, bootleggers, white slave traders, and slick confidence men. Investigations this past year by the FBI, the Internal Revenue Service, the Post Office Department, and all other federal investigative units has disclosed without any shadow of a doubt, the Attorney General stated, that corruption and racketeering, financed largely by gambling, are weakening the vitality and strength of this nation. Today, there are proposals to legalize gambling. Some urge this to obtain new tax revenues, citing the examples of Spain, Norway, Sweden, France, Australia, and 20 other governments whose national lotteries provide significant revenues to state treasuries. Others propose to legalize gambling because they say this would weaken organized crime by drying up some of its principal sources of financial support. It is also urged that legalized gambling would reduce graft and illegal payoffs to public officials. Others propose to legalize gambling because they say it is impossible to enforce the laws against gambling. The only effect of laws against gambling, according to this line of argument, is to raise the price of gambling and therefore to increase the profits of the criminal element who are willing to conduct the illegal enterprise. Closely examined, none of these arguments is persuasive. When the late Thomas E. Dewey was governor of New York State, he answered them in the following words. The entire history of legalized gambling in this country and abroad shows that it has brought nothing but poverty, crime and corruption, demoralization of moral and ethical standards, and ultimately lower living standards and misery for all of the people. In urging the new state of Alaska not to legalize gambling as an economic panacea, Senator Alexander Wiley of Wisconsin gave some additional financial reasons. The idea of gambling would increase net revenues was an illusion. Every dollar raised from gambling would mean $5 spent in higher police costs, higher court costs, higher penitentiary costs, and higher relief costs. In addition to all of these reasons, gambling should not be legalized because it is immoral. Of course, the law is too imperfect an instrument to condemn all immoral conduct. Thus, it is immoral to hate, but the law cannot efficiently condemn that sin. But gambling is different. Its evil effects can fairly be measured in the lives of those who are affected by it. Few would urge that the law should promote gambling, yet to legalize gambling would have just that result. The law has an important standard-setting function. A law legalizing gambling would, in the eyes of many, be a formal declaration that this kind of conduct is moral, proper, and expected. Persons now deterred from participating in gambling because they believe it to be illegal and immoral would be encouraged to participate if it were legalized. Gambling is especially pernicious when it is administered by government or where government relies on it for a substantial source of taxed revenues. In times when our government's appetites for taxes seem insatiable, government officials who depended on gambling for a share of the public budget would have a strong temptation to promote gambling and to protect it against opposition. Those who doubt the force of this argument should consider the history of efforts to impose more stringent government controls on the deadly tobacco product. These efforts are commonly and forcefully resisted on the grounds that the needed health measures would reduce the essential tax revenues and disrupt the economies of certain states and throw many out of work. Let us not allow the monster gambling to obtain that same hold on our governments and our lawful businesses. Government should work to refine the moral sensitivities of its citizens, not pander to their weaknesses. As one law enforcement official stated, any society that bases its financial structure on the weaknesses of its people doesn't deserve to survive. In this first part of my remarks, I've concentrated on some of the history and some of the current arguments about gambling. Now I turn to a consideration of the moral dimension. Why is gambling immoral? And what are its spiritual effects? I will suggest five reasons why our church leaders have urged us to avoid gambling and to fight this evil practice in our communities. First, gambling weakens the ethic of work, industry, thrift, and service that are at the foundation of our national prosperity by holding up the seductive lure of something for nothing. For the same reasons, gambling encourages idleness with all of its resulting bad effects for society. President Stephen L. Richards, in an impressive address delivered at an MIA June conference, reminded his listeners how, and I quote him, "The basis of all legitimate business is a fair exchange of values, honest work for honest pay, goods of value for other goods of value. Gambling, on the other hand, proceeds upon the assumption that one has to lose for another to gain, which is a wholly erroneous foundation." President Richards went on to describe how the element of chance in gambling leads those who indulge in it to believe that chance is the controlling and dominant influence in life. "And so obsessed do some people become with it," he said, "that they cannot contemplate or think of any other way in which to increase their means and their income except by taking the chance that gambling affords." I need not remind this audience of the importance of the ethic of work to the gospel of Jesus Christ. The scriptures condemn idleness and call the idler to repentance. As President J. Reuben Clark reminded the church in a great address in 1937, "We must purge our hearts of the love of ease. We must put out from our lives the curse of idleness. God declared that mortal man should earn his bread by the sweat of his brow. That is the law of this world." President Joseph F. Smith gave expression to the same thought when he said, "We do not feel it is possible for men to be really good and faithful Christian people unless they can also be good, faithful, honest, and industrious people. Therefore, we preach the gospel of economy, the gospel of sobriety. We preach that the idler shall not eat the bread of the laborer and that the idler is not entitled to an inheritance in Zion." That spirit, that philosophy, which is basic to our approach to life, stands in eternal condemnation of gambling. Second, another evil of gambling is that it promotes greed and covetousness, and that it inevitably involves and encourages the base practice of overreaching and taking from one's neighbor. Can a Christian honestly use his gifts in gambling when his winnings are gained at the expense of another's losing? A Methodist minister asked. This minister, Lycurgus M. Starkey, Jr. of the St. Paul School of Theology in Kansas City, concluded with an attack on gambling with a conclusion with which every Latter-day Saint can identify. The good Christian's love of neighbor will stand against every practice which hinders the growth of the human spirit toward the likeness of Christ, or which breaks down the structures of justice in society. The Christian will himself refrain from gambling and from publicly endorsing it in any form, realizing that gambling is detrimental to the purpose of life as revealed in Jesus Christ. End of quote. Third, an additional evil of gambling is its tendency to corrupt the participant. We are all familiar with cases where trusted employees have ruined their lives and brought tragedy and disgrace upon themselves and their families by stealing their employer's money. All too often, the sordid story is traceable to a desperate attempt to pay gambling debts or to finance further gambling activities. The temptations to which the gambler is subjected are such that persons in responsible positions in government and private industry will not hire or retain in employment those who are known to gamble. In recounting the undesirable side effects of gambling, mention must also be made of the fact that gambling is also often accompanied by indulgence in alcohol and other vices. A fourth disadvantage, one cited by persons not concerned with the moral effects of gambling, is the extraordinary waste of time involved in this practice. Writing about 200 years ago, John Locke urged his readers to avoid what he called this encroaching waster of useful time. "'Tis certain," he said, "gaming leaves no satisfaction behind it to those who reflect when it is over, and it in no way profits either body or mind. Those who while away their hours in gambling frequently do so to the neglect of family and work." The waste of time involved in gambling is all the more significant when we reflect that many persons who indulge in gambling become addicted to it. President Joseph Fielding Smith has declared that gambling is a disease which fastens itself upon those who indulge so tenaciously that they seldom quit. Elder Richard L. Evans has described how, and I quote him, "the spirit of gambling is a progressive thing. Usually it begins modestly, and then, like many other hazardous habits, it often grows beyond control. At best, it wastes time and produces nothing. At worst, it becomes a ruinous obsession and fosters a false living by encouraging the futile belief that we can continually get something for nothing." The fifth and final reason in my list of points against gambling is the fact that our leaders have described, and this fact perhaps follows from other disadvantages already discussed, how gambling is destructive of the finer sensitivities of the soul. Elder John A. Widsoe of the Council of the Twelve gave vivid expression to this thought in the following words: "They who gamble, who walk with chance, suffer degeneration of character. They become spiritually flabby. They end as enemies of a wholesome society. A gambling den, however beautifully housed, is the ugliest place on earth. The tense participants live in a silence broken only over the tables by the swish of the wings of darkness. There is an ever-present brooding spirit of horror of an unknown evil. It is the devil's own home." Whenever a Latter-day Saint engages in any kind of conduct that is inconsistent with the companionship of the Spirit of the Lord, he or she pays an enormous price. Left without the sustaining influence of that Spirit, we are vulnerable to temptation, prone to criticism, and subject to being tossed to and fro and buffeted by the forces of the world and the works of the evil one. There can be no question but that gambling dulls the spiritual sensitivities of those who participate in it. In that terrible effect, we may identify gambling's most far-reaching and evil influence. What I have said about gambling will surely be understood to include playing cards for money, betting on horses and athletic contests, including the office pools on the World Series, casino gambling in all of its forms, lotteries, raffles, bingo for money, dice games, and so on. I submit that the spirit of gambling, the same reckless wagering on the chance turn of events, characterizes some forms of investment. The same evils that attend a throw of the dice for money can attend the person who casually puts his money on a highly speculative stock or commodity investment. I know of no better test in this area than that suggested by President Joseph F. Smith, who said as follows, "The element of chance enters very largely into everything we undertake, and it should be remembered that the spirit in which we do things decides very largely whether we are gambling or are entering into legitimate business enterprises." End of quote. One type of gambling that has been most vigorously criticized by our leaders is card playing. Cards may, of course, be played without money, but the relationship between card playing and gambling is so close, and the practice of card playing itself partakes of so many of the disadvantages of gambling itself, that card playing has come under condemnation without regard to whether gambling is involved. President Joseph F. Smith gave this significant advice, quote, "While a simple game of cards in itself may be harmless, it is a fact that by immoderate repetition it ends in an infatuation for chance schemes, in habits of excess, in waste of precious time, in dulling and stupor of the mind, and in the complete destruction of religious feeling. These are serious results, evils that should and must be avoided by the Latter-day Saints." End of quote. Elder John A. Widso criticized card playing on the ground that it was habit-forming and that it was a waste of time. Here's what he said. "It has been observed through centuries of experience that the habit of card playing becomes fixed upon a person and increases until he feels that a day without a game of cards is incomplete. Even a casual glance at the bridge-playing women and men in any community will reveal the tenacious nature of this habit." Elder Widso continues, "After an afternoon or evening at card playing, nothing has been changed. No new knowledge, thoughts, or visions have come. No new hopes or aspirations have been generated, except for another opportunity to waste precious hours. It leads nowhere. It is a dead-end road. Dull and deadly is a life that does not seek to immerse itself in the rapidly moving stream of new and increasing knowledge and power. Time is required to keep up with the times. We dare not waste time on pastimes that starve the soul." What significant advice for students who are using their high ideals and their university experience to establish goals and standards for the years ahead. Incidentally, Elder Widso explained that his objections were not directed against the many and various card games on the market. Most of these, he said, furnish innocent and wholesome recreation, and many are really instructive. It is true that they may be played to excess, but this seldom happens. This is true even when such games are used in games imitating those with playing cards. It is also true that they may be used for gambling purposes, but in fact, it is almost never done. The pall of evil seems to rest upon the playing cards handed down to us from antiquity. They should not be used. End of quote. I urge you, as our leaders have urged us, to avoid being caught in the grip of cards. Those who are pay an enormous price in lost opportunities and increased temptations. And by all means, refrain from gambling in all its forms, from the office pool on the World Series to the exotic commercial forms available in our sister state. Gambling Gambling is a moral evil that we should avoid for the five reasons I have related. First, it weakens the ethic of work and promotes the idea of something for nothing. Second, it promotes greed and covetousness and the spirit of taking from one's neighbor. Third, it tends to corrupt the participant, being all too often associated with embezzlement, drunkenness, and other vices. Fourth, it is habit-forming and always a vicious and unprofitable waste of time. Fifth, most seriously, it is destructive of spirituality and causes the participant to lose the companionship of the Spirit of the Lord. Those should be sufficient reasons to cause any Latter-day Saint to resolve to abstain from gambling in all of its forms. But today in America, with increasingly common and persuasive proposals to legalize gambling, we need a broader resolve. I urge each of you to use your influence as citizens to combat all attempts to use the evil of gambling as a means of accomplishing some supposed social good, including particularly the raising of revenue. When the first presidency of our church opposed pari-mutuel betting in Utah in 1925, they gave the proper response to legalized gambling in all of its forms. I repeat their words. The church has been and now is unalterably opposed to gambling in any form whatever. We therefore advise and urge all members of the church to refrain from participating in any activity which is contrary to the view herein set forth. May the Lord bless us to be strong in this and in other commandments He has given us, to keep ourselves clean and unspotted from the sins of the world, to avoid on our own part participation in the evil of gambling, and as responsible citizens to combat it wherever it occurs, that our society may be free of the pernicious effects of this evil gambling. May the Lord bless us in this, I ask, bearing my testimony of the truthfulness of the gospel to you, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.